This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 74 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is a part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. And today we have a woman who finds inspiration in the relationship between horses and humans. And we have a couple who built the largest dog training network in the world. You're going to love them too. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. Thank you for joining us. Horsemanship Radio airs on the 1st and the 15th of the month, and I have my producer, Jen, with me today. Hi, Jen.
Hello. Woof, woof.
Yeah, I know. We've got dogs on. I almost left the dog part out of there. Largest training network. But no, not horse training this time. Dog training.
I'm very curious about that.
Are you? Yeah, because you haven't heard this yet. I'm excited to share it with you. So you have dogs.
We are a dog family. Yes. We have a greyhound named Glory. And we've been a great
rescue.
She's a rescue. We've been a greyhound family for a number of years now. We love our greyhounds. But I'm very interested in this because Glenn's the dog person in the family.
Okay.
I'm more of a cat person, and I'm sure.
Are you? Those two don't go together. What? What happened?
Well, see, here's the thing. I love Glenn for him being a dog guy, and he loves me for being a cat girl.
That's
nice. So, you know, we kind of embrace each other's tendencies because I'm an introvert and introverts tend to be more drawn towards kitties, I think, because kitties tend to be introverts. Right.
True. Mm-hmm.
And Glenn loves his dog, but Glenn is a very poor dog trainer.
Aha. Yes. Okay.
So and I'm probably not much better.
Oh, you're a cat trainer and we know how that goes.
Exactly. Cats don't need to be trained. They just are what they are. Right.
Do you have a cat? Do you actually keep a cat then?
We no longer have a kitty. Our kitty passed away a few months back. We had a kitty named Beast and he ruled the house.
Oh, yes, maybe it's more like a dog.
Yeah, he ruled the house like a dog. It's interesting how some people are dog people and some people are cat people. But I know your mom's a serious dog person.
Serious, and serial dog person. She usually only has one at a time, but she overlaps, you know, because one trains the next one on. And they are good dog trainers. Both mom and dad are good. And mom's showing the agilities now, too. So if we come back to visit you, should we compete with your, greyhound? No, I'm hearing no.
Well, we have successfully trained our greyhound to come to the door when she escapes the backyard.
Okay, that's good. Oh, I see. Come back to the back door.
Yes. Okay. Now, we're not saying that she comes back immediately. She just comes back.
When she gets hungry.
Yeah, she comes back because she knows she gets a really tasty cookie at the front door. We're having a problem now, though, because for the first 2 years or so we lived here at this house, the backyard where she goes out every day for about half an hour max. And soaks up some sunshine, and that's all she wants. She doesn't want to be outdoors. She wants to be hanging around in here with us. So we put her out there, and every 5 minutes, we have a timer on the refrigerator, and every 5 minutes, we open the back door and say, you want to come in yet? And if she wants to come in, she does. And if she doesn't, she doesn't. And we close the door again. But she has discovered that there's a 5-minute interval.
She knows the clock.
The clock. So what she does is she waits for us to open the door. Say, do you want to come in? She says no. We close the door. And then she escapes through the hole in the gate and comes around to the front door. Cute. Immediately. And she comes racing in the front door. And her crate is like 15 feet from the front door. And it's a straight shot into the crate.
Is that because the treat's in there?
Because that's where the treat happens.
Oh, you've got her so trained like a pet chicken.
Well, if she comes in the back door, when we open the back door and say, is it time to come in yet? When she comes in there, she's much further from the crate when she comes in the back door.
I see.
And it's around the corner. And she has to
D-line figured out.
She can't. Exactly. She can't get there as fast.
That's so funny. And she's a greyhound. So she's a greyhound.
So now we have fixed the hole in the back gate. So she really can't get through the back gate anymore. And she's not real happy about it. So she hops up to the back door and she kind of goes, can you please let me out the gate so I can come in the front door?
Not the back door.
Because she can't run. Because greyhounds have this thing. They're either walking quietly and just about ready to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Or they're running full tilt at 40 miles an hour.
Straight. As straight as possible. Anyway.
That's right. There's not a lot of in between.
That's funny.
Unlike your mom's dogs, they're like twisty turny.
That's right. That's right. And agility dog, mom's monk is so funny. He's, you know, he loves going through the tube and he jumps the jumps and he weaves the poles and he's just hilarious. He's actually hilarious. And he's just always smiling, which is cute. And I hate to tell on mom because she's really good at this. She's really, really good, but he's really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And so if she's going, you know, you have to go with the dog through the agility course. You guide, you're the guide. And if she doesn't run fast enough, he barks at her.
hurry up.
Like, hurry up. He must know their time. No, he just enjoys it so much. He just enjoys going through it at a, you know, hectic pace. And mom's like, oh, you know, got to put some age on this dog or something. He's just too fast. No, she's having a ball though. It's fun for her. You know, it's all Rainers and all Aussie. So she's just having a ball.
Has she always had Aussie dogs or has she had other kinds too?
She's had stock cattle dogs. The Australian cattle dogs was the blue dogs, you know, for generations.
They're like the small ones with the stick up ears, aren't they?
Yeah.
Or are they more like an Aussie?
20 ears and they've got a big jaw on them, kind of a, you know, big jowl on them. Yeah. Yeah. Really loyal dogs, really wonderful dogs. But this one is an agility dog, the Aussie, you know, more Australian looking dog. And the cute story was that she didn't want to get another dog. She thought, no, I don't want, you know, invest in another puppy and the whole thing, but I'll get a lap dog. So we, you know, searched high and low. My sister found a breeder locally that had these little mini Aussies. They're adorable. You know, they're just little lap dog Aussies. Mommy's small, daddy's small, beautiful little dogs. And Monk, she got him, she picked him out of the litter, just thought he was just gorgeous, and he kept growing and growing and growing and growing. And so he's a throwback. He went full, well, he's, you know, I would
he's
say
pretty big.
90% 90%.
Yeah, I've met Monk and he's pretty big.
Yes, he doesn't sit in your lap very well.
No. You would have to have a very large lap for Monk to fit in there.
She doesn't have a large lap, no. So they're just really cute together. Well, we'll have to get those two dogs together. But you're gonna love Barkbusters and the whole training procedure. Sylvia and Danny are just amazing, and you're just gonna love them. And we should hear from Lucy Sewell, who is an amazing photographer. What I did was I got an interview together with Dad and Monty Roberts and Lucy Sewell because they had an experience together when Lucy came out to photograph Dad and Shy Boy for a book that she's doing. Oh. And I think you're just going to love her story. It's really a story about her soul.
Oh, neat. Well, let's introduce Lucy right after this from IFA.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts' Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios. Risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at ifa.com. That's IFA as an Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Lucy Sewell is a photographer best known for her perceptive portraits of major British celebrities. Her work has been published worldwide and is held in the collection of the National Portrait Gallery, and she is commissioned by major publishing houses, national institutions, and magazines, too. Her work is exhibited in the Getty Image Gallery and the National Portrait Gallery. Her most recent major publication was 100 Years of British Music, for which Lucy was exclusively commissioned by the PRS to record some of the last century's major musical contributions, including Dame Edna, she's a comedian over there, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Phil Collins, David Cameron, Dizzy Rascal, and Bob Geldof. Her new book, horses, and humans is the most personal of her works to date, using her photos to explore the significance of horses in her own life and in the lives of others. This project took her across Britain to Ireland and the United States and North Africa to reveal the amazing bond that animals have with their owners and handlers.
Yes. Hi, Monty. Hi. It is Lucy. How are you?
I'm okay. And you?
I'm all right. Yes, I'm back from Morocco. I'm very glad to be home.
Well, anyway, I hope you got something here that's usable.
Well, I definitely did. Some really good stuff from you. Lovely, okay. Lovely stuff. Especially the shot of you in the bar with Shy Boy.
Lucy, I wanted to ask you a question about that. Yeah. What do you notice, like, in the expressions of a horse that's happy and relaxed, like Shy Boy was in the saloon?
Yeah, there's a lot of relaxation. A lot of it is about the jaw and the tongue and the mouth. And horses do things with their tongues. Like the horses, in a lot of pictures, the horse is a little bit concerned. It sticks its tongue out between its teeth. And you can't see that when it's got a bridle on so much. It's very subtle, but there's a load of muscles all around their nose. And stallions especially, they seem to have the most facial expression. But it's something I'm really, really interested in. And I've got loads of headshots of horses and loads of headshots of people. And you can see the people and horses. You can see the connection. Mm. And it's why I want to take the bridles off horses. And because then I said to you when I was with you, Debbie, that's when you really see what the horse thinks of the person.
Yeah.
Because they kind of go off duty. They relax. Mm-hmm. But with you and Shy Boy, it's really interesting because at the end of the shoot we had in front of the back black cloth, you were standing and you were trying to talk to me and he interrupted you because he came up to you and he kind of nibbled you. And I've got a picture of him and his head is right the way up your arm and he's just gently nibbling on your ear. Now, that's what a horse does to another horse when it really likes it. And when it's going up saying, I'm your friend, and I don't forget, I'm still here. And he was doing that to you. Now, that's a real honour from a horse.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have to do that. You were such a good human. You were actually a horse to him.
Lovely.
You know, you were better than a human being. So that is the ultimate compliment. And
when you get a bond, they will get jealousy. They want to be in on every conversation. And
because I was talking to you and he didn't.
they don't want you to vacate them. But I did predict before he went in there, and that's the first time he's ever been in the saloon. He's been in the classroom and many auditoriums and things like that. But I predicted that he would play with the pool balls. And that's the first thing he went for, you know.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. I mean, a stressed horse can't do that. They just simply can't do that kind of thing. That's a strange thing.
He was exploring, wasn't he?
He was playing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
he was.
Horses don't accept things that are strange to them unless they're completely relaxed. And a pool table with those rolling balls has to be strange to that horse. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. You get people to go a little bit out of their comfort zone with their horse as well. And that's when people start. And it becomes very interesting. Then you really see the communication going on between the two. But I would love to be able to, with my pictures, show people that, you know, what your horse is really, what your horse is saying to you, what you can actually understand from the look on its face. It's not just about their ears. You know, it's not about whether their ears are full. That's part of it, but that's the most obvious bit. But there's a whole lot more that they're saying to us.
Do you see relaxation in the jaw, or do you see tenseness in the jaw too? Eyes.
You see definite tension in the jaw. They kind of, whether that's because they're used to having a bit in their mouth and their head controlled, but they kind of very, very tense. But you can see the relaxation as well. It's in the eyes as well. You know, the Arab horses, they want to see the whites of their eyes. Well, I think that's the horse that's scared. Actually, and they lift their upper eyelid, I think, when they're frightened as well. That's they're a bit like we do. They have a definite eyelid opening startle, and then they have a very relaxed eye as well, and their nostrils relax, and they look very soft around the nose,
Lucy, tell us about your join up. because now I'm seeing you in the round pen with that beautiful Arabian, and I'm thinking about you, watching her and thinking about join-up at the same time, and your body's supposed to be. Tell us about your join-up.
Well, I was so thrilled to get an Arab because I love them, and my background has been with Anglo Arabs and horses, flighty, lovely, lovely horses like that. So that was the best horse I could have come across there, and it was just amazing to be with this beautiful, beautiful creature. And the thing about, and I've done join up at home with our horses, and I've kind of got used to it. But she was different, and the way I've done it when I did it with you, I've probably been doing it wrong at home, but I couldn't see her, but I could feel her coming up to me. And you just know, don't you? You can't see them, but you could just feel the presence of this horse. And it wants to be with you, and it trusts you. And that has to be what it's about. It's not about making them do stuff. It's when you discover that there is so much more that is possible that way. That
Lucy,
if you've got the horse... Yeah, sorry.
Lucy, you'd be interested... You'd be interested in the position that you're in right now to know that there is a fellow that calls himself an expert, and he pretends to be or puts out that he's a scientist and he knows all about horses. Mm-hmm. And he's discovered this wonderful thing that professionals can generally get a better result from their work than amateurs can. I'm not sure that's a new discovery, because in every endeavor in life, a professional is probably going to get a better performance. But he goes on to say that join up is actually inhumane, because amateurs make mistakes and they can't get it right. And if that's the case, my position is that if you use traditional horsemanship, amateurs get it wrong, and it's far more injurious than join up ever thought of being, because we're not forcing the horse to do anything. We're allowing
we're
the horse.
To, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are free to join up or not.
This is help to me in your foreword. I would love to bring it forward that your mindset is this way, and that you see that value in taking the halter off, letting the horse be completely free, and allowing the horse to do it because they want to and not because they're forced to.
Because that feels so good. That's what it's about, isn't it? It has to be then it's a partnership. Until then, it's not. It's a partnership. Yeah. It's something being submissive and somebody being dominant, but it needs to be a partnership. And then it's lovely. It's lovely for them, and it's lovely. It's good for us. It's good for us as human beings, isn't it? It makes us better people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Lucy, you're writing a book. I know you're doing a photographic journal right now, traveling the world. Tell us what are your goals with the book, not in sales. I'm talking about what message do you want to give?
I want to find, there is a unique bond that has gone on forever, for, I don't know, 5,000-6,000 years between humans and horses. And I want to find out what that is. And I want to find out what the best of that is. And I want to find that in my photographs. So I'm going all over the place. I've been a lot in England. I've been in Ireland. I've been in America. I've just come back from Morocco. I'm trying to find that, the good thing, the positive connection between our two species, and I want to show it to people in a picture. It's about connection, and the place where I saw it most was with you, and I saw the good that can come for you know, people and horses.
You know what I would love to do with you?
Yeah,
I had a situation here. Debbie, you could send her a tape of it. I had a situation here where on a given day, this feeling came over me, this thought came to me. It was probably ridiculous, but the thought came to me that I had one of these military clinics at the time. And I had about 20 young people there who had returned from the wars of the world. And it just so happens, I think it jogged my mind, it just so happened that I had quite a few of them that looked athletic, and they were young, tough-looking kids, you know, that had been at war.
Yeah.
Three young men. And I asked them, have you ever touched a horse before?
Yeah.
This is during the introduction phase in the classroom. No, not one of them had touched a horse before. And I told Denise, you know, I would like to take some of those untouched wild horses, a couple of them, and I would like to put these three guys in to see how long it would take for the horses to take to them. And she said, absolutely not, Monty, you can't do it. Those horses are
really
too
good.
Dangerous.
It's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, too dangerous they are. And I said, Denise, I want to do it, and I'll be responsible. I'll stand there. Mm. If I see that there's trouble, I'll step in. And what I have on tape is absolutely a miracle. These horses accepted them, followed them, allowed them to stroke their heads. Yes, they were still wild, no question about that, and I didn't have them go ahead and try to put saddles on or some silly thing like that.
Yeah.
But just the bonding or the communication man to horse, it was unbelievable. I would love to have you here to watch one of those things and then do your magic with your lens. It would be phenomenal to get those expressions because they brought me to my knees and I've seen it all.
Yeah, you know, because I think that is the next book actually. I'm thinking ahead, but I would love to do so. Because the rest of the world needs to be able to see that sort of thing because that is just beautiful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And yes, and very few people have. Well, I'm not so sure that any human being that has never touched a horse before ever went in to make a bond with and have the horse follow him around the first horse he's ever been connected with. Yeah. I don't think that's ever been done before.
And you always wonder, do the horses know? Do the horses know these people? I don't know. Because the similarity between, you know, one's come out of the wild and one's come back from war. There's There is more than just a horse and a human born there, isn't there?
Was my thing, Lucy, that I felt that the horses could read that this was a person in trouble and that they had
I think they can. They can.
Yeah, no question they can. I've been there. I've been in trouble before and had them bond with me, you know. So I know it is there. And I think that your lens could find it.
Well, that is exactly what I want to be doing. That if I could achieve that in my life, I would be so pleased.
Well, you just know that this gentling pen here is yours for the asking. Anytime you can do it, and if we can meet in England and get something akin to it, so that you become acquainted with what I'm talking about, I would try to do that for you too.
And I would learn my left from my right.
Oh,
I remember.
It's disorienting in there in that round pen a little
it
bit.
It is. I didn't know where my legs were or anything.
No. But it's amazing. Roger was pretty clever with it all, green as he is, you know.
He's very good with, he's really good with horses in a very natural sense. And I've been at horse shows when people have had trouble loading their horses and he'll just go and load them for them.
Really?
And funny.
Yeah, you know.
That must be disarming.
It is, actually, because he's watched these sort of big, tough men trying to get a horse in. And he said, I'll do that for you. And he just kind of, you know, gently gets the horse in after, you know. So he's, fantastic. But it's because we followed you.
You might have a greater talent finding the right man in your life than you do with the cameras. Who knows?
You made a very
good choice.
I've not done so badly there, have I? Really?
No, you certainly haven't.
It's really nice to meet you both. Yeah.
It was
really nice to have you.
So lovely to be with you. And it was a really, really special time. Really special. And it makes the project I'm doing, Horses and Humans, I mean, who better to be demonstrating the connection? It was perfect.
You know where my heart is, and I'm here. And if there's another project in this for you, I'm happy to try to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah, but that would be lovely. Because I think actually what you're doing with the veterans is, fascinating because there's a lot of that in this country. There are a lot of very damaged people that have come back from.
Oh, I get them all the time over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that could be an interesting. That interesting.
I've been made an honorary Royal Marine. You know.
Oh, have you? Goodness me, that's
I work with
marvelous.
The Marines.
Yeah.
I've worked a lot down in Plymouth there at the bottom.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and the Royal Marines are there at Bickley Barracks, and I've had some incredible times with them there. It's been really one of the best veterans events that I've done.
We got to get you together. We got to get you two together. So we'll. I don't want to take any more of your time. I really appreciate both of
you. Thank
you. Just in this impromptu moment here. It's so good to get you back into home. Lucy, I'm glad you're back home in the UK now.
Yes, I'm glad I'm home now.
And exactly. And I wanted to get you two together just to say hi again and make sure that everybody knew it was real, what happened here for that one magical day.
Yeah, I was thinking today, if I contact Monty, will he, you know, did I imagine all of that? Did it really happen?
Exactly.
You know, because it's America seems so far away all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very, very pleased to talk to you. And it's nice to know it was real.
We all hear about omega-3 and how important it is for your horse's nutrition, but why? Well, simply put, horses were created to get all of their nutrition from live natural grasses. Omega-3 is an essential fat found in many types of live grasses, and it's critical to the horse's health. If they were living on live grasses 24/7, they would be receiving enough omega-3. But in today's world, most horses are fed commercial feed and forage as their primary nutrition, and most of these are lacking in omega-3. That's where Omega Fields comes in. All of Omega Fields' flax-based products provide a balanced essential profile of omega-3, 6, 9, and may be helpful in alleviating problems related to skin, coat, hoof, joint, and sand colic. One of Omega Fields' terrific products is Omega Horse Shine. Omega Horse Shine is an omega-3 stabilized ground flaxseed supplement for horses to help maintain a shiny, healthy coat, strong, solid hooves, and top performance for horses in all life stages. Omega Fields provides the best human-grade, non-GMO ground flax that can help horses with dry, scaly, itchy skin, joint pain and inflammation, poor hoof growth, allergies, and more. Don't just listen to Debbie and I. Alexandra, a customer of Omega Field, says any horse I ever own, I will feed them Omega Horse Shine and I will recommend it to anyone. You can get your Omega Horse Shine today at OmegaFields.com, or just for our listeners, get 15% off using the coupon code Monty2015. All one word, it's Monty2015 for 15% off your next order at OmegaFields.com. That's OmegaFields.com.
Barkbusters USA, part of the International Dog Training Company founded over 25 years ago by Sylvia and Danny Wilson, is a refined method of dog obedience training that makes dog training easy and accessible to everyone. With Barkbusters, you work directly with a dog trainer in your own home using a method that takes into account the unique challenges you're facing, and then it fosters a positive relationship between you and your dog. It really does. Barkbusters dog trainers focus heavily on training people as much as or more than training dogs, so that once you learn to communicate effectively with your dog, you'll have the necessary tools to be an effective dog trainer and the leader of his or her pack. Well, welcome everybody here for Horsemanship Radio. The theme is going to change slightly today because we're going to include Sylvia and Danny Wilson from Barkbusters. But we also have Pat Roberts here as a horse owner, horse trainer, horse shower, and has been doing really well this last year in the reining. And I'm going to bring her in first because everybody knows that if you have a horse somewhere in your life, you have a dog too. And dogs can be a little different than horses, but I think today we're going to achieve a theme of they're a lot alike as well. So, Pat Roberts, how are you?
I'm fine, and I'm happy to be here. And it's just lovely to have both Sylvia and Danny visiting Flag Is Up Farms. And Monty recently did a speech in Las Vegas for Barkbusters, and he really enjoyed himself. And so it's just nice to get to see the faces that I've been emailing back and forth to. Anyway, and of course, you all know that I have a dog, and I've always had a dog, and I'm a total dog lover.
You are. She is a dog lover. We have Monk right now, and he's doing agility and lots of and he's just a love in the family too. I'm glad Mom got that last dog she didn't want to get, but she got him. And Sylvia, I heard the story that your husband Danny was brilliant in that he didn't think that you'd ever be able to get Monty Roberts for your conference, but that he surprised you a little bit and he pulled it off. How'd that happen?
He did. He actually said to me, who's going to be our keynote speaker at the next conference? And I said, oh, we'll find someone. He said, what about Monty Roberts? And I said, oh, there's no way Monty's going to come and talk at our conference. And, well, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I was wrong. That was a dream come true. I have followed Monty, I would say for many, many years, and I had no idea that Monty, when I read the story of Monty and how he started out with training horses, and there was I on the other side of the world actually training dogs and very similar style of communication with the animals, and it was always my dream to meet Monty, and hey, I just can't believe I keep saying, someone pinch me because I'm going to wake up soon.
Oh, we're glad you're here. And Danny, how did you pull it off?
I think, you know, never say no. I think it's probably the thing is, you know, if you can dream something that's possible, it will become possible. And I think that's what we did and said, look, we can make this happen, and we made it happen. And it just didn't happen because of us. You guys were gracious enough to give us Monty's time, and the timing was absolutely spot on for Monty. And I've got to tell you, you made 150 dog trainers at our conference very, very happy by having Monty at our conference. They were over the moon, and I think it wasn't just Sylvia's lifelong dream. I think there was a lot of people in that room that was absolutely honored to have him there.
Well, tell us what they were anticipating. What is it that they were looking for in that conference that they found?
I think, you know, we've been promoting for a lot of years the communication between dogs and humans. And there's a lot of misconceptions about communication. And I think we've always believed that dogs are good listeners, right? And if you give them the right message, the dog will do what you need it to do. And with that, we knew that Monty did the same thing with horses. So, you know, we knew that and we thought, well, if Monty can come to our conference and say to people, well, look, this is the way I deal with horses in a very similar way that you guys deal with dogs. And it's all about communication. It's not about browbeating the dog. It's not about hitting the dog. It's not about putting electric collars on the dog or putting spike collars on the dog. It's about communicating with the dog. That is the key. And dogs are pack animals. And when you look at your dog in your household and you look at the dog in the corner of the room, you are part of that pack. That is a pack animal. It's a social animal. Mm-hmm. It needs a social structure. And if it hasn't got a social structure, you've got anarchy. So what we go into in a lot of cases is anarchy in the household, where the dog is actually in control of that household. What we do is we try to bring back balance into the household. Now, we're not about agility or training dogs to do tricks or anything like that. What we're really about is getting the dog to fit into the lifestyle of the dog owner.
Good, yeah. So it's behavioral.
Yeah,
You're working with the behavioral. Yeah. So tell us some of the great stories. What are some of the turnaround things that are unusual that you're getting? I know you're getting good results.
We do. We get some amazing results. And we, you know, as Danny said, we go into a home where there's an imbalance. And it's sad because people are about to get rid of their dog. They're about to, you know, rehome their dog or surrender their dog to a society or a shelter that's already packed to the rafters, as we say in Australia. And it's of concern. Sometimes we are the dog's last hope. So we have to go in and we have to be able to turn that dog around in a very short period of time because the people have just about tried everything. You know, they're at their wit's end. We had a case just recently of a dog that had bitten five or six people, and it had finally bitten the owner, and they had no idea why this dog was biting them, and they were saying to us, well, it's an unprovoked attack. And, you know, we always say there's no such thing. There's no such thing as an unprovoked attack. A dog's telling you, just like the horses tell you, don't do that, I don't like it. And it's a matter of being able to deal with them in a way that they feel comfortable with. And that's basically what we do. We look at why the dog's biting people. There could be a simple reason, because people have started maybe alpha rolling the dog, grabbing it by the scruff of the collar and rolling it over on its back because they think that's what the mother did, or dragging the dog back to the scene of the crime, so grabbing its collar and dragging it back to the scene of the crime. So when someone grabs the dog's collar, the dog turns around and snaps at them. The next time, all they have to do is reach out to the dog, and the dog knows what's coming, so it attacks. So we have to then go in and turn those things around, and we do that by, just as Danny said, putting communication in place. We start to get people to communicate in a way that the dog understands, because they're treating the dog like a human being, and the dog just doesn't get it, doesn't understand what they're trying to do, and the dog's lost confidence in them. So, you know, that's a case that we turned around. The people were able to keep that dog. They had the confidence now that they knew why the dog was biting them. And that dog has never reoffended. So they're the kind of stories that we get all the time.
Right. And Pat, we've got you here as our horse representation too. But how is it that you think dogs and training horses is a little bit the same and a little bit different?
Well, I think the underlying word here is communication. If you want something from a horse, you've got to communicate what you want. And you have to do it in a manner that's acceptable to the horse. And it sounds to me like we're doing the same thing with the dogs. You understand dogs, and you understand what gestures and what body movements mean to dogs, the aggressiveness, if you... I don't know whether it's looking them in the eye or it's squaring up your shoulders or what it is, but because I'm not really a dog trainer, I can teach my dog tricks, and we're getting better at agility. But with regard to training horses, it is all about nonverbal language of gestures and communicating through body language.
Yeah, I was really impressed in your book. And what is the name of the book? It's Barkbusters.
It's Speaking Dog, the Barkbusters Way.
There we go. Thank you. It's a great book. Quick read, real easy. And I love the first 10 pages. I felt like I was smarter already, just with great ideas. But you were out at what we call the IFA Gentling Pen, or our Gentling Pen for the Wild Horses over here. And one of the things that I read in your book is about how you just draw the line at striking or causing pain in the dog. You just don't find it necessary. And I'm wondering if you saw any similarities with the way they were training the wild Mustangs that were out there today.
Oh, definitely, yes. Look, there is slight differences because we're dealing with two different animals. For example, a dog has got the need to be with a pack, like the same as a horse likes to be with the herd. So there's a lot of similarities there. But a lot of what Monty was saying today about the fact that when something happens to the horse and it kicks out and then that stops, sometimes that can be something that just leads the horse to keep kicking out. So you have to live with that. So it's, you know, as Pat said, it's the communication and the fact that the body language, when the horse was in a comfortable place, then they all turned around and took the pressure off the horse, and that was beautiful, and that's what Danny and I see in dogs.
One of the things we don't do when we go to a home is we don't pat the dog. So we don't actually put our hands near the dog. We don't try and make friends with the dog. We try to get the dog to meet us on the dog's terms, not on our terms. So in other words, we don't force ourselves upon that animal. Mm-hmm. Now, very quickly, the dog starts to accept us into its environment because we're not putting the dog under any pressure. What human beings tend to do is, oh, there's a Rottweiler in the corner. I have to make friends with him. And then they force themselves upon that dog, and that dog might think, well, hang on, I'm not quite ready for that level of relationship with you just yet.
Yeah.
You know, so what we tend to do as human beings is we get a bit sort of funny about, oh, well, your dog's not very friendly. No, the dog just doesn't want to be touched. That's all the dog's just saying to you, don't touch me. And if I met you for the first time, I wouldn't throw my arms around you. I wouldn't pat you on the head. I wouldn't grab you by the jowls and go, you're a nice girl or a nice boy. I think I would be getting into a bit of trouble from a human being if I did that to them for the first time. Human beings do it all the time. When human beings meet dogs, and there's an old fallacy about sticking the back of the hand out to get the dog to sniff the hand, that's just crazy. I've never seen a dog walk up to another dog and offer its paw to another dog, ever.
Ever.
You know, dogs, when they meet each other, they have a way of greeting each other for the first time. Normally things are very stiff. Their body language is very stiff. Everything's moving very slowly. There's no fast movement. And they sniff each other's butts.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting your listeners do that either to dogs because they're not dogs. So there is a way of greeting a dog for the first time. Let the dog come and sniff you. A sniff and a wagging tail is not an indication that he wants to be friends.
Yeah.
A wagging tail is only just, I'm anticipating something. It could be, I'm anticipating biting you.
Mm.
I'm anticipating jumping up on you. I'm anticipating running away. I'm anticipating,
whatever.
You know, whatever, yeah. Whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So wagging tail is not a sign of anything apart from anticipation. There's different levels of the tail that you can look at.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
So you can get a wiggly bum wagging tail.
Yeah.
So the dog, that's normally a friendly, really friendly dog. But unless you're really an expert in this
yeah.
sort of body language, don't go there because you're going to get bitten.
Yeah.
You know, we work with horse owners all the time that call us that because their dogs are chasing horses, for
yeah.
instance. You know, and that's a big problem on horse studs.
Mm-hmm.
And we have gone and stopped dogs from chasing horses.
Mm.
In actual fact, our cattle dog in Australia, we rescued this dog from Japan. And she'd never seen a horse before because she came across in the tsunami. When the tsunami was in Japan, we rescued her from Japan, brought her to Australia, took her on our property. And her instinct to go into that mode.
She saw a horse.
She wanted to go and grab it on the back
in
of the legs.
DNA.
Yeah.
It's in the DNA.
A cattle dog was saying, there's legs, they need to be bitten. And because we had trained her, it was very easy to stop her from doing it. So
we had to train our dogs to be able to stop on a dime, on one word, if they were chasing kangaroos or snakes or anything on the property. Because in Australia, there are kangaroos, they lie down in the grass and the dogs will be running through the fields and all of a sudden this big six-foot kangaroo will stand up out of the grass and be facing the dogs. And, of course, the dog's instinct is to go straight in and attack. We would all, no matter where we were on that property, one word, which was the bar.
The bar word.
The bar word.
I love that.
Yeah.
And the dogs would put on the brakes and come charging back to us.
Mm.
It's funny, I've got to tell you this story. The first horse I was ever, was first dog I was ever called in was when I was back at the RSPCA days. I was called in to stop a dog, a German Shepherd, chasing a horse. And I went through all the processes, which there were several different incremental steps,
okay.
which mm-hmm. as Monty says, mm-hmm. incremental steps. And I got to the point where I said to the lady, do you have what I call a bomb-proof horse? And she said, yes, I've got old Molly. And I said, could you bring Molly into the round yard because we're going to stop your dog chasing the horse and we're going to start at that point. We had done some incremental steps to that point, but we're up to that point. So here's Molly galloping around us in this round yard and we've got the dog and I said, right, let your dog go and we need to be able to stop him before he gets to the horse. So, of course, we did. Molly's galloping around full, flat out.
Yeah.
And in goes the German Shepherd. And the lady and I both went with the bar. And this dog put the brakes on and turned around and came back to us. But the amazing thing was the horse did too.
Oh.
And the woman said to me, this is the Monty Roberts trained method. This is in Australia. And I went, oh, right. And she said, because when the horse is in trouble, it's supposed to come to you. And I went, oh, wow.
You got to join up with the dog and the horse.
Right, right at that point.
Just want to explain the bar word to you, to your listeners. When the dog's a puppy in the litter, if it steps out of line, the mum would growl at the puppy. She'd go, right? So the puppy knows what a growl is. It's already in its psyche. It's already imprinted in its brain, okay? You'll never take that out. It knows what a growl means. Mm. When a dog tells another dog, stop doing something, it growls. It says, stop doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That's just a warning to the other dog. This continues.
I don't like it.
I don't like it. So it's just, it's dog language. So what we're doing by using a bar word is using a growl to let the dog know that it's made a mistake. Now, we use that bar word in every occasion the dog makes a mistake.
Right. So it's like B-A-H. Yeah. So you say,
bah.
Oh, there we go. Scared me.
But you can do it different levels. So
you go, bah. Yeah, it doesn't have to be really loud. Bah. In the beginning.
Then you go, bah. Yeah. So you can do it at different levels. And
if the dog's way over there.
Or
it's the dog's just about to run into a road of traffic, then obviously you need to make that the biggest bah you can possibly, because it's going to save the dog's life.
Right.
So by the time you call your dog back, Fido, come, so he's already in traffic.
Right.
So you're going to let him know that he's made a mistake. So by using that word, and your listeners, if you use it on your dog tonight, just watch his ears. You'll see he knows what the word means.
Mm.
If you're using the word no today to correct your dog from doing things, so you say no to your dog, I want to ask yourself the question, especially the listeners with children. How many times a day do you use the word no? And when is no meant for the dog?
Good point.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is the trouble. We use no a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is, by using that word, the dog knows it's only meant for it, and it's only meant for it when it does something
very
wrong.
Good.
It's really your stop word. Mm-hmm. It's your stop word. It says stop.
So just a little hint for you guys. Just when you open the door, say a door in the house and the dog's going to go through, just use the door as a correction, right? So we're going to open the door a little bit and the dog's going to try.
Just a fraction.
Just a fraction. The dog's going to try and go through the door and just go, bah, close the door, okay? And I bet you about the fourth or fifth time you'll turn around and your dog will be sitting.
Waiting for you
to open that door.
Try that on your dog tonight.
Then open the door a little bit more. And if he tries to go, bah, close the door again. Okay, and just keep doing that until he sits. Then you can open the door. And when you're ready, say free, and he'll go through that door. And what you've done by doing that, you've actually conditioned him to the bar word. Mm-hmm. You know, he's knowing that.
It's a quick way to get that.
Yeah, it's a quick way.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, because I was very curious. I wanted to ask the question,
how do you
said
something about the ba is closer to the sound that they make, and that no actually is the only way they vocalize that as a howling.
Yeah, it made sense to me.
Yes. So they wouldn't use it like that.
They don't. Dogs don't really hear that sound. And, for example, Danny was doing a lecture in Israel to a room full of vets, and there was four speakers before him, and the whole time they were on a property where there was a dog, a German Shepherd, barking the whole time.
We were outside. It was a stage, you know, and there was a boarding facility. And there was this cage with this German Shepherd, and he was just barking. And we could hardly hear the guest speakers. And it came to my turn at the end, and I said, this is quite annoying, isn't it? Mm. He said, yes. I said, would you like me to stop the dog from barking? And they all laughed.
They said, oh, yeah.
So I got the dog out of the cage, and I brought him over. German, beautiful German Shepherd. Did some work with him and put him back, and he went, woo, 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 and bah! And he went and laid down. And everybody went...
So he had a riveted audience.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been like 2.5 hours putting up with that bathroom. Why didn't you do that earlier?
Yeah, that's right. That was me.
Well,
you guys are amazing. And obviously the book I'm just amazed by. I read it in one sitting last night. It's an easy read. It's really good. And I'm sure everything else that you guys touch, and you've got some tools, you've got a harness, you've got some toys and other things. So I hope people find you. What website address do you want to give?
It's www.barkbusters.com.
Good enough. That makes total sense. Bark Busters. And please come back and tell us more great stories and come back to Flag Us Up Farms. And thank you, Mom, for sitting in on with us and providing the dog.
It's been fascinating.
Monk here. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being on Horsemanship Radio.
Whisper the language of the herd. Listen, you don't have to say a word.
It's time for Jamie Jennings to fetch an email from Monty Roberts' inbox and share a morsel of Monty's wisdom in a little segment we like to call Ask Monty.
Leave this world a better place than mine. The magic in the language of the herd.
Dear Monty, I was just wondering if you have to use an enclosed area for join-up, as I live on a Scottish island and it is hard to get access to one. Would a small field do? Monty's answer. The book Shy Boy, the Horse Who Came In from the Wild, and the documentaries made about Shy Boy depict how I did join up with him with virtually no enclosure whatever. The fact is that it was nearly 12 miles to the nearest fence when I was causing him to join up with me. I suppose it is a possibility that your Scottish island is even smaller than the 42,000 acres where I worked with Shy Boy. Every time you approach your horse in a field, the stable, or the round pen, you are communicating in the language equus. The way you hold your body, the placement of your eyes, and the movement of your hands all tell the horse your thoughts and intentions. It is important to remember that communication with your horse is a continuous process. As long as you have a safe environment, join-up is possible. If you have a large field in which to do join-up, you may need to walk a little bit further than if you were in a round pen, but you will be amazed to see the horse begin to move in circles and arcs around you as it communicates. However, please do not lose sight of the fact that a safe, round enclosure, approximately 15 feet 16 meters in diameter, with good footing, is the optimum environment into which to do join-up. I answer this question all over the world, and I understand the fact that people want to know if they can do the work without a round pen. The answer is yes, but a major part of the answer is that an appropriate round pen is the best way to go. Many horse people further inquire as to what the recommended design is for the optimum round pen, so I will give a brief outline of what I consider to be the best design in part 2 in episode 75.
For more of these insights into good horsemanship, go to www.montyroberts.com and click on the orange banner that says Get Free Horse Tips.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts. And I'm dedicated to training horses without pain. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. Western, English, the beginner, or the advanced rider, it doesn't matter. You can connect with other students online too on our forum, and there's a new lesson every week. It's a lifetime of learning for you on my Equus Online University at MontyRoberts.com.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged. October 15th, right away, he's got the Living Legend Tour in Lancashire, UK. Then October 21, he's in Gloucester, Hartbury, and then October 26th, Surrey, October 29th, Devon, November 3rd, East Yorkshire, and November 5th, he'll be in Lincolnshire.
And you can find all of that at the website, MontyRoberts.com, or if you want to talk to a real person who can help you out, you can call Monty's place. It's 805-688-6288. And for details about today's entire show, you can go to horsemanshipradio.com, where you will find links, photos, and more information about today's guests. And we love to get feedback from you folks. That's how we make the show wonderful. Follow us on Facebook. Just go and look for Monty Roberts, or you can tweet. That's right, Monty Roberts tweets. His Twitter handle is Monty_Roberts. And go get the app. It's available for your iTunes, or it's available for your Android or iPhone. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network and download it. It's quick and it's free and it's easy. or subscribe via iTunes. That's the old-fashioned way now, believe it or not, now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's scary. I thought I was getting so smart. And many thanks to our sponsors, too, IFA.com, Omega Fields, and Monty Roberts University. Be sure to visit the other great shows, too, on the Horse Radio Network at www.horseradionetwork.com. You can listen to Glenn and Jen together. And until next time, have many happy horse hours.